I cannot trust the place that I would go to and feel safe, especially when I was having problems at home. My dad's incarcerated. At home, I have to be older than, you know, how I am or the, my actual age. School is a place that reminded me that, hey, you're still a child. I couldn't trust that place anymore because of my experience. And so I hated school. There's two description or two specs, sorry, to the job description of a teacher. A is to facilitate learning. Okay, now that covers every subject or any workshops or any day-to-day workings. So facilitating the workshop, but also to fill in the gap. That is your second job. I look after 160 in my year group and I teach 250. So every single day, over 300 kids, I have some form of connection with. Within a week, you can imagine. And so it's a lot. It is a lot. But at the same time, it's this mindset that you are serving the next. You know, my mom always tells me she's one of my biggest supporters in the sense that, you know, you are touching one student's lives who will then touch 10, right? And the values that you teach them is going to pass on to another generation.
Welcome to the Valuable Podcast, where there is value in every conversation. I'm your host, Victor Sasanya, and today I am joined with Janoy Josephs, a secondary school humanities teacher specializing in RE and citizenship. In this episode, we talk about the challenges Janoy faced while schooling and how he overcame them, becoming the head of Year 7 at a school in South London. Thank you for joining in on the Valuable Podcast. Today is a very, very special episode. It's a bit different, but I'm very happy to have this guest, a highly valued man, and I think he's doing a great work. So today we have Janoy Josephs joining us, and hopefully will give us a bit of insight into his role and how he became valuable. Thank you for joining, and if you want to quickly just introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. My name is Janoy Josephs. I'm 26 years old. I am a secondary school teacher that works in South London.
Okay. And is that where you grew up, South London? Or is that just where you teach?
No. So I was born in Jamaica. And then I came to the UK when I was 7 years old. And I've just always stayed in South. The furthest I went was Essex for university, and then I came back to South. So, London boy.
London boy. Okay. What was it? So that move to Jamaica, like, was that a whole family move? Was that just yourself? Like, what was it like transitioning from other side of the world into South London?
So my parents, they kind of separated when I was three. And so I ended up staying with my mom. And then my dad, he came to the UK ultimately when I was three. And so that move from Jamaica to England when I was seven, it ultimately started off as a holiday. And then I just ended up staying ultimately because I think in the 90s and the early 2000s, especially when crime is really high, I think anywhere else is ultimately better than where you're growing up. So, yeah.
Yeah, and did you go secondary school then? I'm sure, did you school up in South London as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, this year is going to make 20 years since I've been in the UK. So I spend more of my time or more of my life here than in Jamaica. South London. So I went from primary school, year three is when I came, and then I worked all the way up.
And you said you went to school you went to university in Essex. So was that planned? And what did you study it?
That was not planned. I wanted to, go further away from London. And I will explain more in terms of my journey to that. But my original university was Leeds, and then Liverpool. I really wanted to use
university. You wanted to go really far out.
I wanted to escape London. I really wanted to ultimately go rebrand myself. And I thought a new space, somewhere completely different, would have given me the opportunity. I didn't get the grades for that. And so I got, I went to Essex University through clearing. And it ultimately ended up being a really, really good decision. Something that I'm a man of faith. So, and I truly believe that, you know, somewhere where God wanted me to go, because I ended up meeting some people who ultimately changed the trajectory of my life, changed my perspective, my outlook, and ultimately contributed to the person I am today.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's powerful. And that happened in your university experience in that 3 years?
Five. So
five. Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a bit of a story to that.
So I again, because I just wanted to go to university, and a lot of my friends were leaving South London, leaving Croydon, leaving, you know, the area that we were from. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to do something that I feel is interesting. I don't know whether it's for me or not. So I actually got on to the course of criminology and social psychology, found out that it was ultimately a lot of sociology, which I hated. Ended up changing my course at the end of first year to politics, which was something that I'd done at A-level and I was really good at. And then did my first, second year. In my third year politics degree, I intermitted. And then, so I ended up going back again to restart that final year. So, you know, imagine myself, final year of university, 5 years. People who are started out uni with, they either graduated or went on a year abroad placement, they're coming back. So I felt old. I felt like, hey, I just want to leave. And, you know, third, I really wanted to start working. I really wanted to start earning some money. And so the latter part of my uni years, it was very much rushed, trying to be like, hey, I need to get out of this space. I need to go into a new space, a new environment.
Wow. Yeah. Because I'm in final year and I'm thinking I need to leave soon as well. It's been too long. And for you, you've spent 5 years there. So you've had that sort of student experience. And I think it's Essex, a campus sort of uni, or?
It is. Yeah, it is. Really, really good university. The experience was really nice. I wouldn't go back, but I think it's weird. It's an outlet that I have, in the sense that when you really transition into a new space, a new environment, don't discard the memories, don't hate the memories. And it wasn't all peach and roses, you know. Ultimately, yeah, there was some hard times at Essex. But if I was to hate on those period or those times, I'm ultimately hating on my whole experience. And I can't do that, because I met some amazing people. And I ultimately became very independent, or more independent. And so when I was ready to leave, when I wanted to leave Essex, and I reflect upon it now, I'm grateful for the time, but I don't want to go back there. I'm just in a completely new
city. Yeah, but you appreciate the experience. And I think you said something very, very key there, in the sense that don't just hate, because at the end of the day, like, we can learn from the good and the bad. And at the end of the day, it makes us. So I'm sure it shaped you. And I just wondered, like, so throughout that 5 years, is that where you fell in love, or sort of picked up the interest in terms of education as a whole? Because you're in education, you're coming out of education, you don't want to come back to Essex, but you then went into education as a teacher. So what where did that interest sort of stem from?
Man, these are some good questions, because it's like, so whilst being at uni, I've never been one for the big money or the big bucks, as some people would say. I've always wanted to actually have or do something that was useful, and do something ultimately that would give me value. And I never ever connected money with value. It was more so experience and service that I connected with value. And so as I grew up, I could be very open. I think my story is defined in the sense that, my father, he was incarcerated for a period of my time growing up. And then I had a sister who ultimately, you know, she ran away from home. And so myself being the next eldest, I had to look after the younger ones with, you know, my stepmother and stuff like that. And so I ultimately grew beyond my years, independence, maturity. And at that moment in time, I used to hate the fact that I didn't have a childhood, you know, after school where, and I see now some of my students, they leave, they go chicken and chip shops and they take the time. And with myself, I had to rush to go to the nursery, or I had to rush to go to primary school and then go home. And ultimately, I hated that moment. But it comes back down to the fact that I can't hate something that was training me, to the fact that within me, I really enjoyed serving other people.
Mm.
And so when I was in university, I started working for NCS. And as a result of that, I realized that, hey, I actually don't want another young person to go through what I do. And if they did, or if they do, sorry, I want to make sure that they can still enjoy their time and as being a young person before they go into the, you know, the next phase of their life. And so that's when I was really just that interest, I would say, gained its language. I didn't know what it was before, but it was during university that I gained the language as to what I wanted to do and how I wanted to ultimately leave my mark on this world. So yeah, NCS, and then teaching, teacher training, and then here I am.
Wow, no, that's really powerful. And the fact that it draws from something deeper, sort of like your family experience, and you've now went into university, and you said something very, very key. You don't attach value with like money in specific, and like one-to-one, and it sounds very sort of like contrary, right? Because we value something, we're valuing it on the price. but that wasn't for you. And I actually went NCS. I'm not sure about that. Did you do NCS when you were in school? Because I went to NCS when I was in school. So I remember the team leaders, and I'm sure they were just probably like yourself in university taking on an upper job. But, and this is something I want to touch on, but even when I was in NCS, I'm not sure it's because of the culture. I've grown a lot much more from them, but there was not like, I don't know, there wasn't that a huge mutual respect for the leaders, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure why that, and I in my head, I'm always thinking, oh, like, I don't know why these lot are doing it. They must get paid a lot, because this is we're giving them a tough time. Does that make sense? So was that the case for you and your NCS? Did you find any sort of challenging kids, should I say, or was it like all roses?
Oh man, yeah. So I worked for NCS for like 6 years, right? And so I started off as a enterprise facilitator. So those who would come in in the second week, and they'll deliver a course. And then I worked my way up to becoming a program leader and then a program manager. So wow. I missed the mentor. I was never a mentor. I wasn't able to actually do NCS because I think back then, even though you can go, if you're from a deprived household, they still require funding to a certain level in terms of like, you had to like contribute £50, which is contribution. But again, at that point, you're telling, you know, a Jamaican parent, hey, this is a £50 that I don't know. You got a lot of kids. I don't know. So I didn't go NCS. Yeah. When I went back and I started to work for NCS, I was also enjoying my time there because it's like, whoa, this is actually amazing. And again, this whole concept of developing language, in the sense that the people who was going on to NCS were those who just finished 5 years of studying and learning, and they're tired and they want to let the steam off and so on and so forth, right? But they're still kids. On the other side of this experience is the next phase of their life, where they are waiting for their results and they're either going to college or sixth form. So NCS is fortunate to work with them within that window or that period of time. And so for me, because I was able to really understand the people who I was working with, because I really am a people's person, I didn't struggle. Other people, I saw them struggling, and I was able to share some, you know, best practice. But it all came down to the fact that at the end of the day, we want you to enjoy, because after this 4 weeks of experience, you have to go into the world or the next phase of your life. So we want you to enjoy this time. Don't work against us. And that was always my pitch. You know, one of my favorite things that I always used to say, especially when I became a program manager, was that, you know, it's called a wave, right? So you have wave one all the way to wave 12. So I would be like, my wave, your wave, our wave. This whole idea that you have a place here, the person next to you, they have a place here, and we're all a family. I'm now head of year. And I said, my school, your school, our school. Right? So you have a place here. The person next to you has an equal valuable place. And yeah, we're all together in this community. And it's something about really communicating a vision effectively and really bringing people onto it, that alone challenges everything, you know, and low level disruption, anything like that, of people who are not with it.
Mm.
And so, yeah, so I didn't really struggle with that one, but it's, yeah.
No, I think I know why. It's like you have a capacity for people in general. Like, it sounds to me you're very much, you said it yourself, you're a people's person, but you have that capacity, and I'm sure that comes with that patience and that understanding and emotional intelligence. Like you said, like, these are children that's about to step into the next phase of their life. So when you were in that gap, stepping in from university, graduating into training to become a teacher, what was that process like? Or for potential listeners, because I know that hopefully that people be encouraged to become a teacher, and I just want to know, what's the process like getting into teaching?
Yeah. So, you know, it's so good to kind of know yourself. And if you don't know yourself, it's good to surround yourself with people who know you. So I was studying politics and I was like, hey, I want to be a teacher now. You know, I think I know that's what I want to do. There I was trying to be a maths teacher. Bear in mind, coming from a politics degree, and I got a D at A level maths, which I said I would never say that I got a D. And I was trying to be a maths teacher. And so I applied through, you know, Teach First, and I didn't get on. I was like, rightly so, because I would be doing them a massive if they put me through. But at the end of the day, I wanted to be a maths teacher because at that time, a lot of funding was going into those who wanted to do maths and English. And I'm talking about like a 30K grant, right? And I was like, yo, I want some money. So I'm going to be a teacher. That's so contrary to myself because, as I said earlier, I don't ascertain value to monetary, monetary values. It's more so a case of experience. And that's what I, you know, objectify value as. And so when I was trying to be a maths teacher because I wanted the grant, it didn't work out for me. Mm-hmm. So then I realized, hey, okay, you know what? Let me just do something that I'm good at and it will get me in. And then I applied on the last day, I applied to UCL. So it's the world number one for teaching and training. And I got in on the last day, shoot my shot. Yeah, wow. That's it. And then the course director basically said, this is our last day of interview. I like what you're doing. I'd like you to come in. And I went in and I was just, oh my God, I'm so nervous. And it was the right course for me because as a person, I really like to understand the procedures and the protocols of certain things before I apply it. So the PGC, there are many routes into teaching. You have the PGCE, you got Teach First, you got Schools Direct, and others as well. Ultimately, you just have to find out what works for yourself. And I wanted to go back to university to understand teaching, but I hated the assignment side of trying to become a teacher. The practical side of it, so you spend around 3-4 weeks in September at uni, and then you go into a placement for 2 to 3 months. I thrived in that area because I was like, hey, practicality wise, that's all me. And I was tired after 5 years of doing university to go back into university to do another assignment, master's. I hated it. And so that's that side of the PGC.
Wow. But that practical side, you had some experience in actual schools. Was there like, and so for the PGC, does it teach you to become a secondary school teacher? Is it just a primary school? Like how does that work? How do they differentiate the two?
Yeah, so you can get you can do the PGC for primary as well as for secondary, but it's called early years for primary, and then PGC for secondary. But you can go the university route. I've got a really good friend of mine who did the exact same thing, but she went down. She's a primary school teacher, and I'm a secondary school teacher. And then you go into placements. I'm not sure how the primary school aspects works, but secondary school wise, you go to two contrasting schools. So I went to a mixed school, and then I went to a all girls school, but my own secondary school experience was an all boys school. So I've had a mix. I hated my second placement, which is in the all girls school. Hated it.
Wow. Why is that? That's quite interesting, because you went to all boys school, you've taught at a mixed school, and you taught at a girls school. I've only been to a mixed school like all my life, and university is, of course, very, very much diverse. So why was it the case? What did you see? What are the differences you saw in those schools?
Well, for starters, because I was young, I remember somebody said, especially my first, when I was wearing a suit or whatever, they said, "Oh, you look like a sixth former." And I get that because I'm quite young. But I think there was boundaries that I really had to overcompensate and be very explicit with, especially with the students and also with some of the staff as well. Again, as a person, I understand people, and that is one of my superpowers. That is one of my strengths. And so I really took my time to get to understand my students. Those who will be very critical would often say it's because they like you, that's why they're behaving for you. And it's like, that would very much undermine myself and really negatively impact my confidence, especially as a trainee teacher, because I'm asking myself, is it because they actually are attracted to me, that why they are behaving, or is it because I'm putting in all the skills that I'm learning in university and the pedagogical skills to that they're actually responding well to myself? So I just found the place very confusing. Very, very confusing. Yeah. So that's one of the things I really hated about the all girls school. Nobody can ever pay me money to work. And I hope nobody hears this, but it would have, yeah. I really do not see myself working in an all-girls school. I really don't.
But what about, so in the school you currently work at, or even in the mixed school, so like, do you still battle with that in a sense that I guess there's a misunderstanding, or are you ever confused with why students are behaving or taking well to your teaching? Is it because you're, I guess, a good teacher, you're applying all the skills, or do you think it's something else? Because I'm just relating it back to when I was a student in secondary school. I remember there's some teachers that you just know, like, you're going to respect them, right? You're just going to respect them. Then there's some teachers that they're not necessarily a great teacher. You may not perceive them as a great teacher, but you're respecting them out of something else, whether they're good friends with the teacher you like or something like that. Does that make sense?
So one of the things, I used to have a podcast out with a group of other teacher friends. It's called, it's called Let's Meet in the Staff Room. And one of the topics we actually spoke on was favoritism, right? Or my favorite teacher. And we discussed a range of different topics. But what we really, really ascertained was the fact that kids, just like adults, have a personality. And sometimes you gravitate towards those whose personality you get on with. It's just, the only difference is the fact that I'm a teacher, you're a student. I've got like 10 years you're senior, basically, or whatever. But you are a person and you have your likes and your dislikes. And sometimes you can really, really relate to students like that. And I think for me, as a teacher, if you're in my classroom, if you're on my register, you are not just another name on the register. You are not just a number on the rolling system or whatever they call it. You are actually a person. And so I will literally get to know you. Some teachers don't do that. And I think for me as a teacher, relationships is something that's very key. Relationships and respect has been the key foundation to a lot of my behavior management, a lot of that success comes from the fact that, hey, I see you as a person. I want to get to know you. And then we'll do the learning as well. Like, school is just preparation for life, right? So,
I'm amazed because I don't know. Like, I don't know if this is the experience majority of students have. Like, because it sounds to me you're saying like school doesn't end after 3-4 p.m. Like, I'm sure it sounds taxing. Like, you're coming to work after work, but you need to get to know your students. So what is it? Do you actually like shut off from school teaching, I guess, or?
Good question. I don't, but you should. And that is something that my mentors, I literally had a call before this recording, and I was talking to somebody who I consider a mentor, and, you know, it's half term and they were basically saying, what's your plan? I was like, well, I need to do this lesson plan. I need to do this unit. I need to do this. I need to sort out the pastoral side, some reward strips. It's like, okay, I don't hear anything about Genoa, you know? And that's just like, oh yeah. But I think for me, I know one of these days, I would love to get married and I love to have kids. And so I know that my time then, because of my responsibility will be changing, it'll have to change. You'll have to refocus. But until then, right now, for me personally, work-life balance is very subjective. I now can give a lot of time. I work with those who have kids and they're still getting the job done, but they're doing it differently in the way that I'm doing it. And so my morning routine, there's 2-3 days in the week where I get in for around 6:15 a.m.
Wow. Okay.
And then I leave around 6-7. Okay. I teach, school starts around 8. 8:15 is morning lineup. And then we finish at 2:45. I teach sometimes, there's full days where I teach. This year it's calmed down a lot because I have like pastoral hours where I have to go and check in or deal with anything with my year group, or I have PPA, where it's my planning time for my actual teaching. As well as being a head of FIA, I'm also a teacher of religious education and citizenship, i.e. politics. And so when the school day starts, it's go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Before the school day starts, I like to at least get an hour's worth of work to, you know, to center myself, to plan out what I need to do. When the school day starts, anything happens. It was, you know, from fights to Turin to parental court, anything. And so after the day is ended, that's when I have time to sort out, you know, what happened throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that, that'll take around an hour to two. Then I need to plan for the next day, which is my printing or so on and so forth. So I've become a lot better. I have improved. I really, really have improved. But teaching is a very taxing job. It is. You put a lot in, but honestly, the reward is something that no money can literally pay for.
Wow.
It's just something that it goes beyond, because, you know, my mom always tells me, she's one of my biggest supporters in the sense that, you know, you are touching one student's lives who will then touch 10, right? Mm. And the values that you teach them is going to pass on to another generation, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I teach, I look after 160 in my year group, and I teach 250. So every single day, over 300 kids, I have some form of connection with. Oh. Within a week, you can imagine. And so it's a lot. It is a lot, but at the same time, it's this mindset that you are serving the next. That's what it is. And I think the best of teachers will be the one to realize that, hey, you are literally just a tunnel of people that's going to pass through you. And all you can do is just make sure that you equip them for their destination or their next phase of life. You know, and that's how I see it.
Wow. That's some massive responsibility. And I feel like when you're talking, it just reminds me of that, you know, proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. Because 100%. absolutely does. And I think we don't actually see it until children actually mature and they grow older. You start to see some habits, tendencies, how they speak, how they react, how they deal with people. They're learning it from someone. At the end of the day, for children, we're learning it from most. And it's actually quite interesting. So I actually sit on the, I'm part of like the youth council for the Fed. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
No.
Like education. Yes, it was a new role actually I picked up just at the end of last year. And we had like a meeting and they also like have meetings with Ofsted. But one of the meetings that they wanted us to sort of advise on as young people was like, where does most of our learning occur? In the classroom or outside? And some of the takes were quite interesting. And for me personally, I said the majority is outside. Like what happens in the classrooms anymore? Because there's TikTok and there's social media and there's friends, that there's so many people to learn off of and people are actively doing it. So from I just want to get from your perspective as a teacher, what is your job? Like not in the way we see on job descriptions, like what are you meant to be teaching? Is it your job to, you know, teach what gets taught in the household from parents? Is it your job to just teach something that's specific to pass an exam? Is it your job to actually help nurture the student onto the next phase of life? So like, what's your job?
As a teacher, you have, I'll say there's two description or two specs, sorry, to the job description of a teacher. A is to facilitate learning. Okay, now that covers every subject or any workshops or any day-to-day workings. So facilitating the workshop, but also to fill in the gap. That is your second job. And I say fill in the gap in the sense that you'll have those students who don't have a father figure, who don't have, you know, a mother figure, or and you're not paid to be their mom or dad. Like that, I really don't want anyone to take that the wrong way. It's more so the case that you will have interactions where you're going to have to transfer certain skills or knowledge or values that they should have learned from their parents, but they didn't. You will end up finding yourself to be a mentor, an older brother, a friend, you know, a listening ear. You'll find yourselves in these different roles because you are filling in the gap of what's needed for that student, just so you can facilitate the best learning experience for them. And so that is the role of a teacher, I would say.
Wow. And so do you find it's the case that you have to be filling in the gap for young Black students? Because essentially, I think that's what you're doing, and you've created a whole organization around it. And we talked a bit about your family background, and I think it's even myself and other people, like growing up, fathers might not be present in the whole period of our lives. And we see this on the news. We've seen, I don't have to talk about it because we know it's true. So the fact they said fill in the gap, is that sort of your motivation for finding Black men teach and sort of the work that you're trying to do to also encourage, I guess, the younger generation to take up more teaching of those of, you know, black minorities?
Yes, it's so Black Men Teach is an organization that was co-founded by myself and one of my friends, Albert. And we do have a core team as well. So I want to give them all a shout out. Kimoy, Omar, Akeem, Jordan. And we are all young Black male teachers, right? And so the purpose of Black male teachers is ultimately to raise the aspirations of teaching amongst the Black males and the Black male community, but also to amplify the voices of those who are already Black male teachers. But we want to change the narrative, challenge the misconception. Schooling for a Black boy can be traumatic. And I say can be in the sense that not everybody will experience it, right? I experienced a traumatic thing that changed my outlook towards school. And I can disclose this in the sense that prior to this event that took place, and I'm going to explain what it is, I loved school, right? And so it was during school, I used to do athletics, and we have trainers, sorry, shoes, running shoes, then the spikes, and then at the bottom of it you have these little things that go into the ground of the track, and it just helps you. It helps you. It is the correct one. Almost referencing like studs, football shoes. And I had a training partner and was in the same training group. He was Caucasian, and I say that with relevance to what I'm about to say. He was at school, and he, at the time, again, my family, I didn't grow up in a rich family or whatever. We ultimately, you know, I was a pupil premium kid, somebody who got free school meals growing up as well. And so a lot of the things I would get, especially from a coach or whatever, would be, you know, charity in a good way, in a good format. It's fine to ask for help. Yeah. And so with spikes, so my teammate, he threw the spikes in the hallway, and then I caught it. It was in like a smaller bag. And then a younger student reported saying that they saw me selling drugs, right? They thought it was drugs inside that bag. And so I was like, okay, all right, I'm not a drug dealer, but sure thing. I was called into the principal's office, and just myself. So I was the one who was receiving the bag, not the one who threw the bag. And, you know, my head teacher was like, "You're selling drugs. Don't lie. I see it." I was just like, no, whoa. No. And ever since then, it changed my whole outlook, in the sense that I cannot trust the place that I would go to and feel safe, especially when I was having problems at home. My dad's incarcerated. At home, I have to be older than, you know, how I am, or my actual age. School is a place that reminded me that, hey, you're still a child. I couldn't trust that place anymore because of my experience. And so I hated school. I hated school. But because I was determined to not ultimately end up as a statistic, I just tolerated it. Mm. But that specific day changed the whole course. I'm not the only Black boy or other young people who have experienced a traumatic, you know, who's had a traumatic experience in secondary school. And so the purpose of Black male teacher, from my perspective, and why I do, or why I, you know, I wanted to co-found Black Men Teach, is for more representatives to go into school and help change the narrative or the experience of Black male students. Because ultimately, why would somebody who experienced trauma go back to the place and go back to the place of trauma to help it? They wouldn't. They'll run far away from it. And so the whole idea is that if you interject at the point where they're most likely to experience traumatic places, so we work with year 11s and, you know, and those above. If you can interject at the right moment, you can ultimately save the experience of the schooling experience or of somebody who may want to be a teacher. Part of Black Men Teach, we work with 13 young boys across a school in North London and South London who said that they want to be teachers. That's 13 Black male teachers who will then be role models and representatives and go back into school and help another, you know, individual just by their presence being there and speaking up for them. And I never had that.
That's so good, because it makes me, just listening to you, because I feel like in my experience, it's kind of like what you said. I think in year 11, I became woke in the sense that I noticed that this place is not necessarily against me, but it's not so for me. And that's just sort of my experience. But in my head, I'm thinking, okay, let me get great grades, blow out of here and never come back. And I feel kind of guilty, like I'm not brave to come. I was thinking, why on earth will I come back? But I'm going to quickly give you a small caveat. But after that realization, so I went through sixth form 2 years, and I'm in university, like I said, but I've actually returned back to some schools, not my own yet. And that's a story for another day. They don't reply to my messages or emails. But anyway, I managed to get into, and I tell you this because, so I do a bit of public speaking. And it started off more so online and just doing these sort of events, volunteering, etc. And then I was invited. So there's an organization called Rocking Your Teens. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but I've even spoken at, they have a conference every year for they have a boys conference and a girls conference. So the boys celebrates International Men's Day and vice versa. So I done a speech on the Rocking Your Teens conference, and I was literally speaking virtually, but to like year 13 to 14 year olds. I think that'll be year 9, and the feedback I got was amazing. Then basically I done a giveaway, then they invited me back into the school. So this is actually a school near Birmingham, and I went there, and it's like, I'm a university student, right? So but it's like, to me, they were waiting for someone for me to come into the school and tell them, like, speak to them and uplift. And I'm like, wow, there's a bit of power in here. And I enjoyed it and I loved it. And bear in mind, I used to watch YouTube videos. So I'm watching America, like all the motivational speakers, they're killing it. They're getting checks and all sorts just to speak. So I started to think, I should probably do this some more, because I have a journey myself, and I'm not sure if you agree with it, but I was that kid that was selling in school. Now it was very interesting to get your take what that is, because in school for me it was like, I need to fend for myself. I need to, again, so I was a pupil premium as well, so I can relate. I was on free school meals, pupil premium, any sort of trips, scientific trips, I could get like funding for that. Even I was on the, I think they call it 16 to 19 bursary in sixth form. So okay. I sort of went through that, but I was also still selling in school to make a bit of money. So I sold, but I wasn't selling sweets. I was selling like chicken wraps, and my story's out there if people want to read that. No, real rap. Like I was the man in the playground, like, literally, yeah. A funny story. So there was one time, not even one time. So basically, I was selling this much chicken wraps. There was a massive increase in foil on the floor.
Yeah,
that, you know, scrunched up foil. Uh-huh. Yeah. So the teachers started to recognize, like, let me just say the whole story. So the teachers started to recognize these foils, right? So they knew somebody was like, because it was massive. Like, I used to sell like 35 chicken wraps a day for £1, like gone in break time, like 15 minutes gone. And so there was one point in time I came into school in the morning, and like the way I do it is I'll go to the playground, because we have something called, well, we call it a cage. The school I went to was literally a cage, then just got two basketball hoops at the end, etc. So I come into the cage in the morning to sell in the morning when I can, then obviously at break time. I'm walking in school, then one of my friends was just shouting my name, like, but basically when I've walked into the gate, I've seen I'm getting tailed by my not head of year, but someone that's head of years. I know he's behind me, if that makes sense. I actually know. So I'm walking, someone's calling, hey, have you got any raps? I promise you, I'm ignored them completely. I'm walking. Then they start calling my name. Hey, Vixor, hey, do you have any raps? I'm like, oh my gosh. All you see is a tap on my back. Then I got directed into the, there's a room where we write, like, I don't know if you're school, you write statements. And,
yeah, man.
Oh, boy, that was a long day. So I got into the room. They said, open your bag. Oh, and this is in the morning. I sold two, because I sell on the bus as well on the way to school. So I sold around 3 by now. Open the bag. They see a ton load of chicken wraps. They're like, what on earth is going? I was getting in trouble. Health and safety, cooking, everything was just going down. And for me, that, I'm telling you this because it changed also how I looked at school. I was like, why are they trying to stop my economic business? Why are they trying to stop me? Like, they don't want to see me shine, et cetera, et cetera. And in terms of punishment, it wasn't even too bad. I just, they took all the stock. I think I got like inclusion? A whole day in inclusion or detention, something like that. But I didn't get expelled, didn't get excluded, nothing like that. But why did I ever mention that story? Yeah. So the way I sort of looked at school sometimes was like, is me versus you. So I never intend to come back. I feel like when I come out, I've beat you.
Yeah.
I'm up. But I just want to bring it back to you. You saw the need to sort of come back, and not even come back, but you're doing more than the average teacher would in terms of what you already said, that you plan your days, you stay ahead because you don't really have kids, etc. But now you've founded Black Men Teach. So no, I just wanted to, I think give honor where honor's due. Like, it's powerful, and I think it's very much needed. And how could, I think you said you worked with young people. How could people even get involved, whether they're teachers or whether they're students, want to talk to a mentor? Is that something you facilitate? Or
yes, so part of Black Male Teach, there's four different arms that we do. So, as you know, we support Black male teachers and we support those who want to become teachers. I lead the outreach kind of aspect of it. So we go into schools and we deliver workshops that from 7 to 10, year 10, we literally just want to spark interest. Go into schools, deliver one-off workshops, you know, maybe a drop-down day. And then in year 11, we start the recruitment process onto our mentorship program, which, you know, is from year 11 all the way until they finish university. And then they start to apply to become a teacher. And so each year we're exposing them more and more to the lifestyle of a teacher, as through the lens of a Black man. And so, you know, we partner them up. So if any school wanted to kind of get in contact, it's just more so a case of sending us an email. We can come in and do after-school sessions. The only annoying part, I would say, is the fact that because we're also teachers ourselves and we work and our clientele, you know, is schools or our schools, we can't really get some time off to kind of go in. So it's just more so a case of working around it. But it is something that we're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so the amazing thing about, you know, one of the things that happened since the pandemic is this whole virtual world. So it could literally just be, you know, delivering a virtual workshop, you know, within my free hour that I may have in that day and stuff like that, just to accommodate the fact that, hey, we're on a mission that is really, really, it's huge. But there must be some starting steps. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just some sacrifices in the sense that, hey, there's some schools, there's one Black boy in one, you know, deprived school somewhere in the UK that feels like nobody understands them. And if we can reach them, that means we've done our job.
That's really good. And I wish sort of like there was that before. I don't know if you ever looked up to somebody who's been doing this, if that makes sense. Like, did you have a role model or did you have a mentor yourself that you looked up to and inspired you to enter the education industry?
Those who inspired me to go in, I say some of my best teachers were actually female teachers. And that's because I was just so, you know, exposed to them than actually black teachers or Black male teachers in general. I mean, I only had four Black female teachers, and I can remember them. I can honestly remember them. One of them I currently work with, you know. When she sees, she's like, you know, it's a Jamaican lady. She's like, oh my God, may I get so old? And that's just, you know, that's my dead attempt at doing a Jamaican accent. I genuinely cannot. and it's just amazing to kind of work with her because it's so fascinating in the sense that when she saw me, she said, I always knew it. I always knew that you just amount to something. And it's so interesting in the sense that as teachers, you don't see the final product or the end product. You're just in their lives for a short 5 years, maybe seven if you have a sixth form. But you only end up seeing it, you know, later on in life. So, for example, Adele, she's one of my favorite singers. I'm not sure if you saw this, but she did a night live with Adele and where she was just playing from her new album, and she invited a lot of like celebrities and also some normal average people to come in. And one of the people who was invited was her year 8 teacher, who was only in her life for 1 year. And they invited, and then the teacher saw her, you know, Adele is this great person now and stuff, and you know, all that she's achieved. And it was only 1 year worth of impact. And so imagine the sense of like, if you're with that child and you're positive, you are someone positive for them and they see the value of yourself, you don't know what you're doing in the sense that, hey, you are impacting a whole family because they're going to go and teach their kids some of the values that you've taught them, have some of the conversations you've had with them. And it's so impactful. A teacher, you never see the impact, you never see the end product until it's the end. I'm sure something with yourself, Victor, some teachers, you know, would always, you know, this entrepreneurial side that you had, when you make it, when you're there at the top, they'd be like, hey, yeah. And he always knew you had it in him kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so fascinating. It's a sad part of being a teacher as well, because when you let them go, they're going into this world where it's hard. I'm so real with some of my kids. My year 11s, it might as well just be a philosophy lesson, man. Because I'm just like, you know, life is cruel. And you just have to find the small moments that make it worthwhile. Mm. But when you leave school, there's something waiting for you that is not always going to be kind to you. And I have this conversation at all, and then it gets so sober. And I find myself getting so teary-eyed because I'm reflecting upon my experiences when my dad was incarcerated and I was going through sixth form. And, you know, I was just alone. I had to grow up and life wasn't kind, right? But and now that I've made it through, I'm able to look back and be like, hey, it was all valuable experience.
Yeah.
I may not have liked it then, but I can appreciate it now. And I think those are the kind of conversations I have with my students.
Yeah, that's good. And just talking about that valuable experience and made you a valued man, like what if you can just reflect on some of the practical things, or like, because if we're getting real, like what is it that you do? Because I've picked up some key themes and trends. So for example, you're very, very much determined. So whether you're getting to school at 6 a.m., there's obviously, it means you must have some sort of organized sort of structure in your life. So, or you're motivated. So I want to know what practically, what does that look like? How does one become, you know, so valued? And I think at a young age, you've worked your way up to head of year and also achievement coordinator, teach yeah. citizenship, religious like studies. Like this is no small feat. So what does it take? Because I'm sure not everyone can do it. So what is it?
Yeah, it's, you know, you're right in the sense of determination is so key. With myself, I don't unless you call it determination, I would just say, hey, I'm just trying to be somebody, right? That's how I see it. I see in the sense that, you know, I did not come to this country ultimately to not improve on the life that I could have lived when I was back in Jamaica. And so a lot of the things that I do is always, you know, being driven by that. So determination, 100%. And I also think organization was something I really value, the fact that, hey, I do consider myself to be multifaceted in the sense that there's different things. I love to cook, right? And I always say to my students that, hey, give me 10 years and I'm going to be getting my restaurant. That's what I'm going to be doing.
That's it. That's
doing something for myself. But I also think what's been so helpful in terms of values is really being selfless. That's something that has actually gotten me to where I am now. I consider myself to be very selfless in the sense that I'm serving this greater mission that is above me, and I see the role that I need to play in it. Mm. And that's what has literally helped me. I remember when I was applying, and when you're becoming a teacher, you have to do at least some work experience in a primary school and a secondary school. I went back to my school, you know, that same place that was traumatic for myself, and I had some lovely teachers. And, you know, again, there's no hate, no harboring of anything like that, because I'm now mature in that aspect of it. And one of the teachers, you know, I said, yeah, I want to be a head teacher. Within 6 years, you know, it's going to be, I didn't say I want to be a head teacher within 6 years, but within 6 years, I want to find myself in a position where I am in leadership. You know, it could be
yeah.
lead or anything like that. And then he said to me that, hey, let's just do one step at a time. Let's do what? Now, it was so weird when you said that, because as a person, I've never been that. I've always been able to see the bigger picture. And what's helped me get to where I am now is the fact that I always had the bigger picture in mind.
Yeah.
Always had the bigger picture in mind. And this leads a lot of the conversation I have with my students. When they come into my lessons and, oh my God, I've got an hour's detention. Man, this is just my friendship group. Oh my God, oh my God. I say, hey, what is the bigger picture? you come in this lesson, you're learning that's going to help you with your GCSE. You get your GCSE and you continue with life. That's the bigger picture. And so when you have this, it just makes it a lot easier. And that's the thing that's kind of got me to where I am now. Determination, organization, and always having the bigger picture in mind.
Yeah. Wow. It's like you're a visionary. you see things in the future. And I think even subconsciously, your actions, your routines, how you go about life, it will be in order to get there. And head teacher, so I mean, with all talking about vision, setting goals, is that something that you really want to get to, head teacher?
100%. I may settle at deputy, but head teacher.
No, we don't settle on the valuable podcast. we you can get there. It's just fascinating. And do you think that would be in the current school you're in? Is that sort of working your way up, or would you like to sort of
move? No way.
All right.
One of the things I've had to accept is that if I want to do progress, if I want to progress at the rate that I want to progress, obviously taking sound advice as well, I will have to move to get that experience and to find myself in a position. And the way things are with myself is that I believe everything happens for a reason. And so when it is time to go, or when it is time for the next phase of my life, I believe it will be opened. You know, as I said, I am a man of faith. God was showing me that, hey, the next step is here.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking about some of the listeners, because I'm sure there's some students, whether they're at university, whether they're at sixth form college, or even secondary school, because by the time this comes out, there's a few months left to like this exam, GCSE, A-level. So what's your advice? Like, what can you sort of say about that?
As my mom always says, especially when I'm struggling to get through university, he says, look, it might be long, but it won't be forever. Okay. So the small sacrifice that you have to do now, it might seem long, and it is long. It is long right now, but it won't be forever. And ultimately, you're setting yourself up. So my advice to anybody who's going through this transitionary period where, you know, they have to commit themselves for the next couple of months so they can be better and be greater. You have to have the bigger picture in mind. Do what you need to do. And that's it. No consolation needed. You know what I mean? Mm. Just do what you need to do.
Perfect. We're keeping it simple. You've heard Janoi. It's actually been a pleasure. Just this conversation, like, time has just flown by, and I'm learning so much personally, and I'm a student, so I actually went, it's a bit selfish, I'm going to take this advice for myself, but hopefully it can be applicable to everybody else. But if anyone's listening, where can they find you, follow you, support you?
Yes, so you can find me on Twitter at Mr. J Josephs, so MisterJ Josephs with an S at the end. In addition to that, you can also find me on LinkedIn. I don't have Instagram, and Facebook is just for family, so just find me on Twitter and LinkedIn, as well as connect with this amazing organization that I'm privileged to be a part of, and that is Black Men Teach. So which with Twitter and Instagram, so Black Men TCH.
Amazing. And I'll make sure I'll link that in the bio wherever you're watching this podcast. But again, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wasn't that episode so great, filled with so much value? If you enjoyed it as much as I did, make sure to share it with a friend or family, and follow us on social media at Valuable Podcast. And don't forget to sign up to the mailing list at www.valuablepodcast.com. Remember, increase the value you provide, and you'll rise in due time.